My pleasure today in a chilly Soya Square, where it's even been snowing, to talk to the lovely Elena Yazykova Castello. And she's used to this weather because she spends some of her time in Russia, so snow, she's no stranger to snow. But to see snow in Soya was a bit of a shock. But Elena is an artist, a sculptor, and she was an architectural designer. She's a gallery owner, and she owns one of the most famous galleries in Moscow. But today, she's in Soya, because she has another life in Soya. Welcome, Elena.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'm very honored to be invited here. Thank you very much, because everything connected with Soya is very dear for me, and the main information, when I'm not here, I'm getting from your website. And I love your radio very much, so thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, that's a pleasure, but we need to understand for the listeners worldwide here, how you are here. Why are you, with all this background and all the lovely places you've lived in, why are you here in Soya? What brought you here?
When my son growing up and my grandson was born, I was married again because I was divorced. And my husband is American, and we lived in all over the world because he was working abroad. And when it came to the question where to live, where to end our life, we decided that it would be quite between, because it's quite difficult for David to move to Russia forever and for me to start the life in the United States again. And Mallorca is just between. So
Mallorca is the midpoint between... Is it really? Is it strategically?
Yeah, it's in the center between America and Russia, Siberia. Well,
that's a very new concept for me, the idea that we are the halfway house between Russia and America. That could be very important for us, actually, politically, right now, couldn't it?
You know, I think I'm very lucky that we were living internationally, because to be the Russian wife in the United States will be quite difficult, because you immediately need to go into this monocultural life. And like in the United States, which I admire, of course, but it's really all American is the best, you know, and you have to become American, which will never happen with a person in ages. And Mallorca, like an international place, has its history of relations with expatriates. So from one side, I absolutely admire Mallorcans. I think, you know, I'm so lucky. I have such a neighbors, such a supportive people. I like that they behave like a mirror. If you don't smile to them, they are passing by. But if you smile to them, you immediately get a response. And I know that they survived historically on supporting neighbors. And that's what I came across all the time with my neighbors who accepted us and were so lucky, because it's really wonderful people. And from the other side, you know, it's so interesting, because when we are gathering for our parties, there are people from France, from Sweden, from UK, from United States, from Russia, from Mallorca, from everywhere. And I think it's the future of our world to live this way. And I think if you are thankful, if you are interested in the world, I think it's a great present to live this way. Once my Canadian friend, with whom we were living together in Saudi Arabia, told me, I cannot believe how it is possible to live in some monocultural country. Can you believe I have my friend, and she has all the friends, she's American, and all the friends are American. With me, one friend is Italian, the other friend is American, the third friend is Russian, the fourth is Chinese. It's so interesting, because I come to know all these different countries, and it brings me a lot, and all my friends a lot. I start to love these countries and understand much more of them through my friends. That's what I feel here in Mallorca.
I got to take you back to your choice of Mallorca now. Did you just get a map out and measure which one was halfway between? I mean, how did you actually come upon these shores?
It's a metaphor, because it's really, I think it's Europe, and it's Europe, you know. For example, when I'm going to United States or Latin America and I admire these places, I'm a city, I feel myself a little bit on a different planet. But in Europe, all our cultures, no matter that we're Russian or British or Portuguese, we all come from Mediterranean culture. Even when you're in the Middle East, you feel connection with this great world, European civilization, because everything is coming from there. And when I'm coming to Mediterranean, it's strange, but I feel myself home. So that's one of the reasons, that's, how to say, compliments to my Mallorca. But of course, the basic solution was belonging to my husband, who knew Mallorca much better than me, and who was coming here before, because he was working in London, and Mallorca is very popular in England. So that's how I came to know Mallorca through him.
So your American husband introduced you to Mallorca?
Yeah, no, I heard about it before, because some people traveled here, and I heard about it, but it was somewhere very far. It was out of my perspective.
Yeah. And how long ago was it then that you came here?
97.
And you bought a home here?
Yes. We lived in the beginning in Andraj, in Pueblo. So we started to look for something else, and you will not believe, I have never been to Sawyer. And the only place we traveled all around, it's always something happened when we had to go to Sawyer. And we decided to buy the house, and I was sitting on internet, and I saw this house, which we bought there. And we reserved it. And
without seeing it?
Yeah, without seeing the place. We sent 500 euros.
Hang on. Without seeing it and without having come here at all.
It's so beautiful, because it's such a view. It's such a view from the roof when you see the mountains and the bell tower of the church. So we came here in 2 months. And since we went out of tunnel, I just made the... And until now, I cannot breath out.
So you've got that magic moment when you come through the tunnel and you think, this is it. And everybody that really settles here knows that feeling. Yes. This is a universal feeling of this area.
Exactly. Yeah. All the people I met here, I have a feeling that I knew them all my life. Because it's the same type of people who are settling here. So that's why it's very, very cozy.
So you have spiritual connections with many of our local people.
Of course, yes, yes. And I really thank God for it. It's absolutely fantastic.
So, Elena, how long were you here each year?
Well, you know, it was different, because besides having gallery in Moscow, which is like my pleasure, and parallel life, there is a job of my husband, and he was working for many years in the Middle East. So I was coming here only from time to time. We were coming here, two of us, for a month or two. And then I was coming here and staying longer, sometimes 4 months, 5 months, because of the work with reconstruction, because we couldn't do it all in one time, as we were not staying here. So, but now I hope we'll spend here the biggest part of the year.
Right, so this has become more your home.
Yeah.
So tell us about your other life, your parallel life in Moscow.
In Moscow, you know, it was... I love Moscow, and I have a lot of friends there. And Moscow is all what I am. That's what I'm bringing to this world, because I'm absolutely 100% Moscovite with all my...
So you were born in Moscow?
I was born in Moscow, yes, and my sister is in Moscow, my son is in Moscow, my grandson is in Moscow. So everything connects me with Moscow. And I was always, you know, grown up, and I was very lucky to be born in the family of my parents. My father was an architect and my mother was a musician, and all what I knew in my life was absolutely the best surrounding you can have in Russia in those days, because it was again like Sawyer and Mallorca, the state inside the state. Our family was the state inside the state. So it was a really interesting life with my adorable grandmothers who survived revolution. Grandfathers I didn't see because they all disappeared in the camps and executed during the times of Stalin. But instead it was wonderful life. It was books, it was music, and wonderful school. Then fantastic art university.
Russian aristocracy then?
Yes, yes, yes. You know, it's now a little bit silly to talk about because... but we can talk about it because now it doesn't sound serious and snobbish and ambitious because it's just part of all our history, of which our common history, not only mine, because of course there is nothing left from aristocracy in me, I think, sadly.
Not these days.
I would like have more manners.
apart from the political...
70 years of revolution, you know, of course.
Apart from your political aristocracy.
No, it's very interesting family because really, you know, I think it's interesting because it gives you the possibility to see the history in each individual life, in each individual family. From this point, it's very interesting. And it's true because, for example, from one side, my grandmother, Princess Uchtomsky, she's coming from...
What's her name?
Princess Uchtomsky.
She's a princess?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And you know, the family is so old. It is coming from Rurik, who was the founder of Russian state, the Swede. You know, in Russian history, there was the fights between the children who inherited the power from Vladimir, and they were fighting each other, and that's why they decided to invite Vladimir. Excuse me, we'll cut it out. It's a mistake, historical mistake. So the sons were fighting with each other, and they decided to invite the person who is not belonging to the country, and they invited the Swedish Rurik, who was the founder, the first ruler of Russian state. And so my grandmother, Maria Alexandrovna, she's coming from that side. From the other side, her mother was, they were all Germans. From my mother's side, it's also a very interesting family, Hungarian, who moved at the times of Ekaterina the Great to Russia in the 18th century, Erdély. And his wife was Serbian.
Serbian.
So it was all the family, Erdély and Živković. From my father's side, the family starts Yazykov, this which you can find only in Turk or Arabic languages where they can pronounce it. I know my husband can never pronounce this. They were Tatars, and the founder of the family was Khan, who got the invitation from Ivan the Terrible because he was bringing Tatars in order to organize Russia. And they became Orthodox Christians, and they got the noble titles. So that's how they arrived. The family also. So it's all, and we're always, you know, it's so interesting because for all the years, I'm looking like my Princess Uchtomsky grandmother, but at the same time, you know, these Tatar eyes and high cheekbones, it goes through so many centuries, and it's so interesting to see how these features are going in the faces. Like my grandson, I never thought about my nose, but my grandson, suddenly he started to suffer that his nose has this thing, and it comes from my grandmother. And I think it comes through so many generations from the Uchtomsky, you know.
So. But the multicultural nature of your own background and the different countries that have made you what you are.
Yeah.
When I say aristocracy, that's not right at all, is it? You come from more like Russian royalty.
No, it's nothing left in me
nothing
from
left,
it.
But history would say that you are... Yeah. Are you a princess, darling?
No, it's already, you know, it's, you know, you are a princess by birth or by marrying prince. Even if you are a princess by birth, if you marry not the prince,
you're no longer a
princess.
That's why I'm not a princess, isn't it? That's why I'm not a princess. I didn't marry a prince.
So everything is about the proper marriage.
Oh, dear, how very boring. So you have come from a very illustrious background and you had a privileged childhood, and I'm very happy that you did, because you can read so much of Russian suffering that I am delighted that you were not part of that. So tell us about your progression into your life that has now taken you to one of the finest art galleries in Moscow.
No, you know, it was always, you know, I was working with museums and exhibitions for years, and then, you know, you always depend on the taste of some customer in the Soviet Russia, especially absolutely idiotic, who dictates you what and how he wants to see in your work, which is definitely boring. So I was always thinking, and besides, the eyes of the designer is a very catchy eye. You see the names, you see the artists, you see the directions in art, you know, you have to have good memory, know a lot. The decorator and designer artists are usually good artists, very widely educated people. So I collected quite luggage of the artists who were lying between the jumps, like not an artist, not a painter, not a sculptor, not the poetry, not the prose, you know, so this genres which are existing between. And I decided to make a gallery on it and to make all the exhibitions like performances and assemblages, like installations. That's how it was born, because I met my friends with whom we're still together. Our main friend, Marina Lashak, she's now the director of Museum of Fine Arts in Moscow. It's our national museum in Moscow. So she's very serious person now. But the other friend, my Luba Shaks, we're still with her, and she carries all the heavy pressure of the gallery, because she's there constantly. But we are deciding with her which exhibitions we will do and how we will present the artists, and that's how we cooperate. And we make a lot of exhibitions. It's all about, you know how to say, it's not even about, as I'm always saying it, it's not only about art, it's about artists and life in art and life with art. That's why our gallery is situated in the very heart of Moscow, and it is done as if it is such a hectic Moscow apartment, with an idea that you have a great realistic grandfather, conceptualist artist father, and yourself belong to, to contemporary art, and at the same time you are fond of naive art. That's why all the genres can meet there and mixed up together and put together, and that's why you can see absolutely new themes which probably will be not noticed by the other galleries. That's how we work.
And do you have freedom to do exactly what you want in art in Russia today?
Yes, you know, a lot of it, sadly, I don't want to say, because I'm not a great fan of the regime in Russia, but at the same time, you know, a little bit, all the fears about Russia, like constant fear that in Russia there are only frost minus 45 and bears walking on the streets, a little bit are too serious, because in reality, yes, we have some pressure, but we have the same pressure like everywhere in the world. For example, there was half a year ago, there was an exhibition in Hermitage in St. Petersburg of contemporary artists, and it was such a scandal. Oh, no, it was not in St. Petersburg, sorry, it was the exhibition of a very famous photographer who is making the photos of the nude girls. And it was a scandal because, of course, some stupid religious Orthodox activists, they organized the demonstration in front of the gallery, and they started to protest. They said it must be closed, this pedophile, this artist pedophile. And it was such a scandal about it. In Facebook, usually, it's very popular in Russia. Everybody was discussing it, how horrible it is, there is lack of freedom. But if to go deeper, it's really stupid. But it's not coming from the power, it's coming from some stupid activists, who are even worse than the authorities. But this artist had the same scandals in the United States. he was under investigation, he was in the court. So, you know, from this point, yes, there is a pressure, but it's like everywhere else. Yeah. For example, I must say to you, even in political articles, because I'm reading, if I want to understand, not to know, to understand what they're talking about, if I'm interested in some political events, I'm reading always Moscow magazines, I'm reading Guardian, Economist, and I'm reading New York Times, of course, because of Don. And Al Jazeera, definitely, because they're very good journalists. And it gives you just the possibility to understand what they're talking about. Because everybody are lying. By the way, BBC called the word of the year post-truth.
Post-truth, yes.
Yes.
That is this year's word, isn't
yes.
it?
Post-truth.
We're living in a post-truth era. Well, yeah, the false facts on Facebook, the false facts on... Very interesting.
So you cannot understand it. It's really scary when you start to try to understand. It's scary. And I notice how I try to understand. And then I close my mind because I'm scared to understand and go deeper.
So, Elena, tell us the name of your gallery.
Rosa Azora.
Rosa Azora. So is she a person, Rosa Dora?
No. If you will write this word, in reality it must sound like a Rosa Azora. It's the word which we call palindrome. It's the phrase which can be read from both sides.
I see,
So it's the game, which is hidden inside the word. It's a phrase which is palindrome, so you can read it both sides. It's such a verbal game. Joke. So that's what is the gallery.
So it's a reflection of work within work, concepts within concepts,
mirrors. It's possibility to touch the outer reality. You know, like yesterday I saw the charming little video where the child who only starts to walk, he's talking with his shadow. He tries to communicate with his shadow. Because it's always, in spite of our adult, it's always you have a feeling that there behind the mirror, you know, there is still some other reality. So it's really, and that's a possibility to touch, because there is no difference between this one. What is the difference between the table and what you imagine or what you see in your dreams and what in reality you're dreaming about? And your memories, you know, it's so, for example, Sawyer, you'll not believe to me why I love Sawyer so much.
Why do you love Sawyer?
First of all, it reminds me of Moscow. Because every day when I was studying at school, I was going to school by tram.
Tram.
This tram, which is passing our square, I can show you the photos, unbelievable. Yeah. Exactly like this. Mine was number 12 and 36. Then, you know, my grandmother, my favorite grandmother, she was an aunt of my father, after the camps, she had no right to live in Moscow. And she was living in a big village or a little town under Moscow named Khatun. And I was coming to her house. In her house, there was the loft, which was literally, it reminds me of the Shires. And then there were these old trees, you know, like we have, they were... how you call this? Leap, the tree, Linden in German, you know? This tree which has leaves like a heart. And it flowers, and the best honey the bees collect from it. Okay, I don't remember. Yeah. No, but the trees with the holes in it, you know? So it all reminds me of this place full of miracles, because it all the time seems to me that there is something, you know? Like when you renovate the house, they see me. If you will look carefully, they always buried pots with treasures in each house. So that's from childhood, from that place, from my dear Khatun. And then it is Crimea, Gurzuf. If you look to the village of Gurzuf in Crimea, because I grown up there, because each year we were going for a month with parents since I was a very little girl.
Is that your holiday address then, Crimea?
Always, yeah. Crimea, Gurzuf. It's called, in spite of it's absolutely Turkish village, even by the name, but visually they say it's an Italian village in Russia. It's the bay reminding very much of the bay of Puerto Sawyer, only we have beautiful mountain there, which is called the Bear Mount, which is making this beautiful landscape. But all the same, it was little narrow streets, mountains around. I will show you the photos, you will be surprised how much it is alive. So it's all reality. which is in my mind, and parts of the reality here in Sawyer, which build up the picture of my dream place on Earth, if it can exist. It's Sawyer for me, definitely.
So right now, in 2017, then, you are living in your dream place in the universe when you're here in Sawyer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, no matter what troubles I have, and the mood, no matter what bad mood I have, if I look around, I'm absolutely happy. And by the way, you know, it's also, I remember, it's also fall in love with the people of Sawyer. I remember, I saw it 2 times. Early morning, it's just the sun rises up, and the person is sleepy man driving a tractor, and his eyes are half closed. And then he raises up his head, looks to the left, to the right, it starts to smile and go on smiling. That's the feeling. That's my feelings here in Sawyer.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Shirley Roberts. I'm talking to Elena Yazykova Castello. We're going to take a short break. Back in a moment.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Elena Yazykova Castello.
Elena Castillo. Just right.
You say it.
Elena Yazykova Castillo.
Thank you, that's perfect. Take us to Saudi Arabia now.
Yes, you know, that's very interesting because everybody, you know, I was lucky and privileged, I think, to live in the parts of the world which people don't know. Because usually there are legends about Russia, and there are, of course, a lot of legends about Saudi Arabia. And I'm always protesting when they start to blame Saudi Arabia, because, how to say, having Saudi friend, my dearest, Firial Albasam, I will tell her to hear this radio.
Yes,
she's an unbelievable woman. And, you know, everybody don't like regimes. Very often people don't like regimes, but the people are wonderful. And in reality, the countries can be judged by people. And the country history is created by people, not only by the rulers. Yeah, it's a stupid regime. But you know, that's for me a surprising thing. I'm looking at it, it's such an exotic. But I know that a lot, what I hate most of all in life, cliché. Each of us, it's naturally all the people have cliché. But we have such a lot of cliché, for example, towards Saudi Arabia, towards Russia too, I say. And it's dangerous because we know what it is, anti-Semitism, what it can bring to. Because, you know, there is such a lot of cliché, was always existing such a lot of cliché about Jews. And it brought, it gives birth to anti-Semitism, and we know what it can bring to. I must say to you, so in Saudi Arabia, I'm thankful to it because it's broke up all my cliché. First, it's turned up upside down all my mind, because what is good for me, I saw there. The things which are good for me can be absolutely not good for the other people. And the things which are good for me, absolute for them, are absolutely unacceptable for me. Like we always say about enslaving of Saudi women. And I must say, it's not true. Because there are just, yes, there are women, there are violence and everything, but there is violence and women suffering from the law in each country of the world, even in the most liberal. Because it's very strange to know women who like different when nobody's pressing them. They like to veil. It's a family tradition. They like, you know, like, really, there are such a pattern jokes, which I said, but it's really funny thing. They can look at the most basic things in life. It's not necessary to say in radio, but I will just say it because it's interesting. I had a gallery there, too. I opened a gallery there, too. I had a gallery for several years. And I also had my exhibition in the embassy, in one of the embassies. And all the works which I'm exhibiting there are prohibited by law because it is images. So I could exhibit only in the embassies. And television was coming, taking interview from me there. They were shooting me covered with black, but they were not shooting my works. Only if they were there making such a still lives. They were shooting only still lives.
But all the images. Just images.
The heads. I will show you the work.
Head.
Yeah, huge ceramic. Very, how to say, not very realistic head.
So what's the logic? What's the logic against that?
It's you know, their culture is verbal. You know, there was in Christianity, in Byzantium, there was also an argument about permission of images or not, because the art, don't create yourself an idol.
So this is the religious thing. Yeah, this is all to do with not taking photographs, and it's not taking the images in that sense. I see.
So, but there was one princess who bought from me all the exhibition, and then she invited me to her home, which was also very interesting. And she was the second wife of the Minister of Interiors, very educated woman. She graduated from Sorbonne and then post-graduated Boston University. She's working, she's writing. And it's very interesting because they like Spain, and when you cross the gate of her house, you arrive in Marbella. Everything is same, swimming pool, you know, these straw umbrellas. Wine at home, which is prohibited, they will put you in prison. Any wine. So we were sitting, we had some drinks, you know, we chat a little bit. And then and she was saying very interesting things. By the way, she said that futurologists, and it was long ago, she said they're researching the Bedouin way of life, like the idea of the life in future. Because, you know, all the luggage Bedou has must be transported by one camel. So it's very interesting how they... it's our future. But after that, when we relax, she said, tell me, please, I'm so curious. Tell me, how it is possible to live with one husband, to be the only one wife of a husband? She said, I'm very happy that you're asking me, because I'm very much confused to ask the person how it is possible to live with a husband being his second wife. She said, no, look, first of all, I never saw his first wife. And his first wife is like 30 years older than me, and he had to have the permission from her, from him, to marry me. And if she will not give him this permission, he would not marry me. But now, you know, she has her own home, I have my own home. She has 3 days, I have 3 days. So, and when he's coming, I have visagist, massagist, florist, they decorate the house. The cook prepares a dinner, and we meet with each other for the talk. I come to know all the news from him, for love, discussing all the most important things. I'm telling him my news. We enjoy the company of each other, and it's the full, real communication. And the next day, I can relax. I'm laying in bed until the middle of the day. I chat with my friends. I meet my girlfriend. And then again, the next day, I need to prepare. And, you know, I'm always, you know, I have energy to be beautiful and interesting. But how do you manage to keep the relations between yourself if you see all the time each other in front of your eyes? So, you see, it's absolutely different logic.
Look, I have to ask you, were you tempted by this? Were you tempted by this regime? Could you have lived that life?
No, you know, that's, for example, you know, they're talking about driving.
Driving,
women permit... You know, they're always the most conservative part of the society of Saudi Arabia. They're women after 25.
Really?
You know, yeah, all this Oriental culture. It's not about the men ruling the world. It's about mothers-in-law ruling the family. and ruling the world. So that's why it comes from mother to mother to mother. And I know, for example, I know that Ali was a wonderful person from Yemen originally, and he was working in telecommunication, graduated from American University, very educated person, as charming wife, beautiful. She was always in veil. She had two kids. You cannot believe. She's so orthodox. Ali is absolutely free person. He wants him to travel because she knows she's only praying. She will hit the child of 2 years old by her hand if he's eating with his left dirty hand. So it's very difficult to imagine. You know, I'm not saying that it's good. It's horrible because, for example, for many, many years, it's a member of our family, Ramesh and Farina, who lived with us, you know, and their daughter, adopted daughter, who came to our villa, you know, and was lying a baby on the table. She grown up. She's 1 year younger than my grandson. And immediately she's married for producing children. They are Muslims. And I said, Ramesh, how it is possible that nowadays you can give it a kid? No, it's our tradition. Madam, if she will not marry, she will never marry again. It's horrible when it is really inside your world, when it enters your world. But usually you just have to accept that there exists different world where are different rules. And the people, it's very strange to imagine, but the people can like their own rules. I can never find the words, you know, to explain it. And one time I think I managed to understand and to put it in words. Like, for example, the poor Saudis, if they're working, Oriental person, let's say not Saudis, just informal in the Middle East, the poor person working in the house of the rich person, he doesn't want to live like European. He wants to live like his rich Saudi employee. That's what is the point. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to their wives to have this freedom. They don't understand. They don't consider, you know, it's suitable. They would like to have Europe with all the achievements of Europe, Western world, I must say. But so that it will fit them, so that they will change it, know what is now going on, so that they will cover their wind. They like it. Look at our Russian Soviet republics, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. As long they stopped to be under the Soviet leadership and pressure, they came back, they're coming back to their rural traditions. That's very strange to imagine. And for me, it's, you know, I don't know. I just don't know. I lived there for many years. The only one thing I understood, that no matter how long you live there, you will understand nothing. And it's only ambitious idiot will see that he understands me less. I think all the fairy tales we have are like Sleeping Beauty, you know, 1001 Nights. It's just the attempt to understand the East and try to explain what it is, because I don't think we can understand. It's so different. But the world, that's why the world is interesting.
And what parallels do you see with conservative Catholic Spain still trying to live alongside their traditions and their young marriages and all the things that have been in the past in Mallorca? How do you see that same tradition here, really, that they live alongside people like us that bring in our Englishness or our Russianness or our Americanness? What do you think, there are any parallels, or do you think that the Saudis have got an extreme version?
You know, probably it's very difficult to talk to me about it, because, you know, I mainly see the creative side of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, for me, the creative, you know, it's all, how to say, when I think, I must say to you, you know, I'm not an atheist.
You're not an atheist.
I'm not an atheist. And I think, you know, each person has the right to think and do what he wants. I don't disrespect the people who are very religious. I know all the horrible things which were done by church. But I always think that, you know, if the minister of culture is an idiot, it doesn't mean that culture has to stop to exist. It's different things. I think religion is a very private thing, and I think it's powerful when it is private. And when the people remember that religion is about the best, not the worst, rule, and you have to judge yourself, not the others. Each religion is telling about it. But mainly, yes, of course, when it is becoming human institution ruled by humans, it's becoming a little bit scary.
Elena, take
us everywhere, and I must think too. It is connected not only with religious; it's connected with any fanatism, and I think the people who are making the solution, how the others have to live, are definitely scared. And I don't care which ideas they have, how well they think. I think these are the most dangerous people.
That's right. But Elena, bring us back to Mallorca in your own creativity. What are you doing? Because you can't be sitting on your hands while you're here for the months that you're here. What are you actually doing? And when will we see an exhibition of yours here?
You know, we're now in the moment of transition from one house to the other. That's why I think for the half of the year we will settle, and I need to install my kiln and everything, and then we'll start to work.
Your kiln?
Yeah, my kiln, because I work with ceramics, and as long as it will be done, I'll start to work, and I hope to make an exhibition here, because 2 years ago I had an offer to make an exhibition here, and I was participating for the first time. I opened the doors of the house and participated in this Nuit de l'Art. And I hope to go on with it, and maybe to make some exhibition. But in the beginning, it's really now for me the time to settle.
Tell us about your ceramics. So this is what you're. This is not you organizing the gallery. This is not you traveling the world. This is you working with your hands.
Yeah, you know, it's always, you know, when I'm making the exhibition, I'm always. It's always reflects my feelings, my thoughts. Talks about my communication with the outside world, probably in the most honest way. And that's why, you know, it's always some theme. For example, I made an exhibition all devoted to my Oriental experience, and it seems I'm finished with it. And probably now I'm not making an exhibition yet, because I still didn't establish my internal real relations with Mallorca. So, but I hope I will do it. I think you will not have very high expectations from my work.
I'm sure we will have fantastic expectations of your work, because we interviewed, as you know, a friend of yours here, who just by chance had moved to Mexico, and in looking at the house, he walked in and recognised a piece of your work immediately. What was that work, and how is it living in Mexico? What's the story of that?
It was that's part of this Oriental project. You know, when you ask me about Catholicism, by the way, my exhibition in Museum of Oriental Arts in Moscow was called Santos de Arabia, because Santos, it's these religious sculptures which are in reality part of this religious puppet show. No, you know, these processions, this theater which is going on for the week. On the Easter here, you know how they carry these sculptures. I wrote the text, I will give it to you. It's all my experience of relations with Saudi Arabia. And I like to make all my sculpture, decorative sculpture, I dress the sculpture, like these santos which are in the church. So I made in Saudi these Arabic sculptures, not Arabic sculptures, these images. For me, representing Middle East, as I see it, and I dress them like
the Ku Klux Klan, like they do here.
No. Just a second. You know, we'll really show you some work.
This is radio. I'm not sure I have to describe it.
No, so that you will understand what we're talking about. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I dress them. And for me, you know, the sculpture this way becomes more human. By the way, it's when I was in Saudi Arabia and had a gallery there. I had an exhibition of a huge collection of pre-Columbian art. And I'm usually a little bit scared of all these Native American sculpture, because, you know all these traditions, and I think they're barbarian traditions. And it's in the art you sense this something. They're a little bit scary for me. And suddenly I come across the sculptures which are so nice and sweet. And it's happened that in Colombia they never had human sacrifices, but they sacrificed sculpture.
Sculptures.
Yeah, I have. I bought.
Well, like we do a guy, like we burned the image this
exactly.
week for,
yes,
for San Antonio.
Exactly. Yes, yes, yes. And you know, I bought this charming couple with this, you know, these long skulls. You know, they like Ekdaton said, and like all of them in Latin America. So they are hugging each other. But their heads of this loving couple were cut. And you look at it, it's so sad because they are representing humans, and it's something there. So that's what it is, my thing, you know, because it's I'm making the figures which are alive for me, and I hope for those people who fall in love with them, and I dress them. I would like them. The owners of these works to change their clothes.
To change their clothes.
Yeah,
to,
you
know, what, did you want this to be daily changing?
You know,
you
Nero,
sell a whole wardrobe to them,
yeah,
do you?
You know, Nero, he had a sculpture of his sculpture, which was in Rome. This sculpture was dressed in the same clothes he was wearing each day.
Yeah. Nero. Now, that is, I mean, I'm sorry, that is real. That's the height
the
of something.
That's the sculpture story.
Narcissism gone wrong.
Yeah. But it's the story of sculpture, because when we look to the ancient sculpture, which is classics, on which all the sculptures based until the most contemporary sculptures now, it's all based on this classics, which was not white marbles, as we mentioned. They were all painted. They were all very lifelike. So that's why I'm dressing them.
Well, I've got an image now of these dress sculptures. Yeah. Now, you do know that round in Solia that they do dress the trees occasionally, and sometimes we sit and knit in the square, and we knit these things, and then they wrap them around the trees. I mean, would that do? Would that help? Would that just take you on a similar journey?
Okay, I will put here somewhere the sculpture. I'll be very thankful. Yeah, it'll be some common project.
Let's fantasize where you would put your sculpture. So you're doing a Solia sculpture. Where would you like to put it in this square?
I don't know. What I'm making is small and private. It must be somewhere in the
corner
of your apartment, here, yeah, on the fireplace shelf, or somewhere on the open window, you know, close to bed.
I'm thinking bigger central square.
Well, no, thank you. I will also know. I looked at the square and I will try to think about it.
Because you are obviously centered here, and your time is coming where you'll be more and more centered here.
So
it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to talk to you, and I look forward to that, the development of your Mallorcan sculptures. And please let's think of your first exhibition being right here, and then we can tell the listeners of Boat Radio where to find you. Elena, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure. So interesting. Thank you very much.